The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I am your host, Danny, for episode number 47. And might I just say, 47, would you have guessed when the season started, this current season that has been an absolute roller coaster, that Danilo, of all people, could have a chance to start 47 games in all competitions? Frickin' Danilo.
Really is the surprise of the year. Like, of all of the least expected things, for Danilo to be, like, one of the best performing and most important players of the season is, like... But, hey, maybe now people will shut up about the Cancelo deal, because, you know...
Hey, he was playing just fine during the summer last year, so it kind of, you know, it's still a surprise, because I didn't even really think he'd be getting that much time at right back to play Cuadrado was playing. But, hey, more power to him. I'll take any positives this year.
That's right. We're coming to you after a little bit better of a result. I don't know about performance, but better result than last week. So let me bring in the crew here. We're chuckless this week, by the way. So we've got Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Danny.
Hello, Sam. We've got Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here, as always, after, you know, taking a thought off. But, you know, good to be back.
Yeah, we gave you the weekend off. Are you feeling rested after your weekend away?
Yeah, you know, I mean, just muscle fatigue, nothing too bad, so I'm back.
Got to get those cords rested every once in a while, you know, those vocal cords.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. And we've got the newest member of the Black and White and Red All Over crew, Caleb Turrentine. Hello, Caleb.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here. I miss podcasting, so yeah. I'm excited for this.
Thanks for joining us. So as I mentioned, Juventus with a win as compared to last week when we had Tito on, where he could gloat about Juventus dropping points against Fiorentina. So obviously it was not a very good performance overall outside of, say, the last 5 minutes and then stoppage time. But thankfully, as I mentioned, the first couple months of when Cristiano Ronaldo was a Juventus player, thankfully his goals actually help Juventus now, rather than come against Juventus. So as Sam gets a wry smile on his face, your thoughts on the Juventus win that probably shouldn't have been a win based on how they played the first 85 or so minutes.
No, that was one of the direst performances I've seen in a lot. Like that was Del Neri level bad. Like it was such that, you know, after Juve scored, or after Udinese scored, rather, on another one of those brain farts that we've been seeing all year out of this team. After about 10 minutes, I was starting to think, there's no response here. This isn't gonna happen. And it happened that fast. I didn't see a way out for a long time. And it was because when you look at certain elements of the game, the fact that we created so little, like, look at Simone Scuffet in goal. Poor guy. Here he is not playing, you know, it's his, I think, second or third game playing all season long. Hadn't played a top flight game in almost three years.
925 days, I think it was.
Yeah. And if you look at the rare occasion that on the rare occasions he was actually called into action, he was terrible because he was so rusty. There was that free kick in the first half where he came out to try and get something on it, and he just kind of like tamely palmed it right at Matthijs de Ligt and like got really lucky that there were people in between de Ligt and the goal. And then on that last goal, on the winning goal, I mean, this has been challenged in some circles where that I've been on, both at, but both in our forum and others. But I personally think Juan Musso saves that if he's not suspended, or at least does something with, I mean, to let yourself get megged like that at the near post is bad goalkeeping. You know, if it had gone one side or the other of him or something, that's one thing. He was right in front of the ball and he got megged. That's bad. And all this is to say, if Juventus had actually put this guy under pressure at all throughout the entire rest of the body of the game, what might have happened? This might have been a really comfortable win in that case, because if he was facing shots, if you had him facing shots all game, judging by what we've seen, we saw the rest of the time that he was actually had to deal with the ball, good things would have probably happened for Juventus, because he just wasn't seeing things right. But yeah, it was another, I mean, it was so flat. It was so listless. I do wonder if the fact that Inter had been confirmed as champions an hour before kickoff kind of had a mental effect on the team going out. The idea that, you know, that the reign was over on their watch, which is, you know, you never want to, in a situation like this, you never do want to be that team. And now they were. And I wonder if that had something to do with the way that they came out mentally. But everything was so flat and listless. The passing was slow. The off-ball movement was non-existent. And it was awful. And then you get those two moments, the first being the handball by DePaul, which is, I don't know what he was thinking. Like after a couple of months of really awful things happening in the wall for Juventus, it was nice to be on the other side of one of those for once. And of course, in a situation like that, this, you know, you absolutely want Ronaldo standing over that penalty kick. And then Rabiot comes in and on like his probably what must have been his maybe third or fourth touch, because he'd only been on the field for 3 minutes, launches a great ball. Ronaldo gets to it over a defender who had just come in relatively cold. That's another aspect of that I mentioned in my recap, was that, you know, the guy that was marking him was Samir, who had just come on for Kevin Bonifazi, who had had a fantastic game. But overall, it was just, Sergio's mentioned in a couple grab bags that they look checked out, and it has never been, that has never been more evident than now. And the only thing I can hope is, you know, next week when Milan come to town, that Federico Chiesa is fit enough to play, and maybe you might actually get some push and energy from somewhere and figure out a way to win that, will be a critical head-to-head in the top four race.
Yeah, I mostly agree with Sam on almost everything, except I do think that while the second goal, the Scufet thing, I don't think that was such a, you know, bad mistake. It's one of those shots that happens super quick. You know, it's the guy, Ronaldo's between two defenders. I'm guessing he didn't think that he was going to get to the ball. I didn't think he was going to get to the ball, but it was a fantastic cross by Adrian Rabiot. I think it's a little bit of one of those things that the shot is so quick that you just don't even have any time to react. Would a great keeper stop that? Maybe, you know, we'll never know. But I, you know, like Sam said, I'm sure happy that we finally got some luck in a Cristiano Ronaldo free kick, that's for sure. Just because it had been, you know, it's been ghastly. And I'm guessing it will continue to be ghastly, but they lucked out this time. So that's always nice. Especially, considering that Inter just won the championship and they won it in a very Juventus-like way, in which every single little bounce that kind of just completely went against Juventus this year, every single one of them went for Inter. And you can chalk that up for the luck. You can chalk that up to, you know, work or preparation or whatever you want to call it. But it was a very Juventus-like championship for me, in the sense that they got all those little results. They got all those little bounces going their way. And I think this is the first match in a second that those little things went for Juventus. I mean, the PK is just, you know, just a complete gift. Excellent cross by Rabiot, excellent header. I mean, it's just one of those things where, like, you did nothing to deserve that result and you still get it out. And that's exactly what, you know, Juventus have been doing for the last 3-4 years. And that's exactly what hasn't happened this year. So it was, it leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth because it was a bad game. It was a very boring game. It was a very poorly played game. But at this point with, you know, European qualification being what it is, I'm not going to get picky about how we're getting the points. You just, you know, at this point, actually the title of my piece was 3 points. That's it. That's all I care about. Like, you know, we got the result we needed. And considering this was a quote unquote easy matchup with the Milan Inter Sassuolo gauntlet we have coming up, that's, you know, they really, really needed this one. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway is that when you're looking at how it's like on two separate ends of the spectrum, how poorly they played, but also how important the 3 points were, they go hand in hand. And at the end of the day, you can't really, I mean, you can obviously complain when it's been a season long thing with these performances, but you, when you're walking away with 3 points and you're still right there in a Champions League spot, maybe it can serve as some motivation, even with the way, you know, obviously Inter winning the title, running away with it with this many matches remaining. It's important, I think, to have a game like that, maybe spark some motivation, maybe do something. But I do, going back to the two goals, I think it is kind of funny that, you know, we talk about Ronaldo hitting the wall all the time and his most important free kick of the season still hits the wall. I mean, sure, it was blocked illegally, but it feels about right that that's what's going to happen. It always felt like it was going to be somehow important that him hitting a wall would go Juventus's way instead of just, you know, being blocked back out 30 more yards. And then on the second goal, I tend to agree that it was a goalie mistake, but I also, and I don't give credit to Ronaldo very often, so listen carefully to anyone new here, but his movement on that was perfect. The ball was great, but his movement to get there and be able to get ahead on the ball was, I think, even better than the header itself, especially because looking back and might not be exact here, but that, after he heads the ball definitely takes a deflection off the defender's chest, which I think might have thrown it off the goalie. And, you know, I could argue it was an own goal if you really want to get into the physics of it. But, hey, I won't go that far. We'll give him credit, I guess, for now. But, you know, again, he, like everyone else says, he wasn't good. The rest of the team wasn't good. I think the game really embodied the midfield confusion that we've had all year under Pirlo. I think this really brought every single issue that they've had all in one game, especially, you know, it was easier to overlook when you have individual performances, but with McKinney actually being bad, Bentancur being bad, you know, that's, you can't have that happen. And, you know, it's frustrating, but you walk away with 3 points. And for someone who isn't the biggest Ronaldo fan over here, you know, I just kind of like, oh, no. He got his 3 points. I'm not celebrating him, but let's move on. Let's get to the next game.
You know, just to, you know, it joining in into the, you know, Ronaldo love party we have going on here. I think that that's a great point because I remember when he was in Real Madrid, my brother is a Real Madrid fan, so I watched a fair amount of their games. And so, not super often, but a lot of the times you would see him both in Champions League and in La Liga. It just kind of like, be contained, be bottled up, be kind of like not super effective for large parts of the game. And, but somehow, some way, he would come through at the end with something, with anything. I mean, he would, you know, yeah, sometimes it was a PK. That's, you know, I mean, that does happen. But sometimes it was with movements like this, when he was objectively bad all game long. And then the one moment, like Caleb said, that's a great move to put himself into position. He's between two dudes and he still gets the shot off. Like, yes, I mentioned it in a couple of graphics ago, I think that, you know, it just, why does he have to play all the time when even when he's playing really bad, like, why don't they sub him out? And I guess this type of games is why, because even if he's playing poorly, like, he just has that, you know, knack. He just has that ability to get to that ball in the last moment, you know, even if he's been bottled up all game. I think he does have that that ability. And, you know, this is not the first time he's bailed out the team. This is the first time that he's bailed out the team in a while, I think, this season. But this is not the first time we've seen something like this. So it is, you know, it is nice that when, you know, if all things fail, you still have, you know, arguably the greatest goal scorer of all time in your team. So that's not a horrible plan B, I would say.
I would argue Udinese bailed out Juventus more than Ronaldo bailed out Juventus, just to be clear here on the last, how those two goals were scored.
And also the, not only that, but the game, the game as a whole, I mentioned this in my post game. This was not a situation where a smaller team was playing the game of their season and holding Juventus at bay. Udinese did not play well.
Like, well, they didn't do anything special at all.
No, Udinese, they didn't have a shot on target after they scored. And they had, you know, in the second half, they had, I think, all of two actual opportunities to extend their lead. This was an Udinese team that was playing really, really bad football alongside Juventus also playing really, really, really bad football. And it comes down to, you know, the game came down to two mistakes, one by the entire Juventus team on the free kick that led to Molina's goal. De Paul sticking his elbow out in the wall. And then one really, really great passage of play with Rabiot taking the early cross and Ronaldo, like you guys said, getting, you know, making a really good run to get onto the ball and get the shot in the first place. This is not a game of who is better. It was a game of who is not worst, because it was just awful, awful football from everybody.
All right. On that note, we're going to transition into something a little bit different. I teased last week that we're going to have the return of the Twitter questions. And I guess folks were looking forward to the return of the Twitter questions because we got a whole bunch of them when I woke
pent
up.
Pent up energy, right?
I guess they're sick of us talking about the Super League. So we've got a whole bunch of Twitter questions, and pretty much the plan is just to have one question per person here. So I'm going to start with the newbie, Caleb, from friend of the blog at Juve Therapy. Opinion on Mino Raiola signing Barbara Bonansea as his first female client.
It's hard to get excited about anything that Mino Raiola does because it's just like, I'm tired of hearing about it at a certain point. But obviously you see that kind of stuff happening for the women's game, and that is going to bring publicity. That is going to bring, you know, some good things. And you always like to see that happening. And it's really cool for a player who's as good as Bonanza is to, you know, but also not very well known. I know she just made the World 11, but she's not a name that always comes up in European play because she hasn't been through the Champions League. You know, the Italian national team hasn't been, you know, deep into a World Cup. A lot of people don't know about her. So it is kind of cool for her, I think, to be able to be in these headlines as, you know, some women soccer fans might see that name, not really know much about it. And it might push them to learn more, not only just about her, but the Juventus team and the Italian league, which obviously needs a lot more behind it. And so in that sense, I think this can be a good step.
Makes me sad to think that it probably does signal Bonansea leaving, though, doesn't it? Because you don't sign with Mino Raiola to stay in a league that only pays semi-professional salaries. That's just...
Yeah, I think... But at the same time, that does make me go back to feeling good for her. Because obviously I want to watch her and I want her to succeed at Juventus. But at the end of the day, yeah, girl, go make your money. All right? Don't get paid what you deserve.
It also greatly simplifies the situation for Andrea Stashkova that you had in your first piece for the blog. So that's...
Yes, and she scored two more goals and had two more assists this past weekend. So, in a start, I'm just saying. She's legit and she's only 20, so let's put her out there. Let's let her lead the line.
And the Juventus women also have a couple of very good young strikers out on loan right now. So if Bonansea does leave, that could very well open up a spot for either both of them or at least one of them. So definitely an interesting situation, because I remember somebody responded to her, you know, to us, to the article we wrote about it, saying they only operate on 1-year contracts. And it's like, yeah, the women's game is a whole lot different than the men's game in Italy. So next one will go to Sergio Romero, who is known as the driver of the Inter Milan is a fraud bus here. Do we hate Inter A as much or B more than before the season?
No, I think, look, it pains me to say, and I alluded to it at the beginning, but they just had a really good season. They did. I mean, it is what it is. They, so many times you would, you know, glance at the scoreboard, and while Juventus was struggling against, you know, Crotone or whatever, you would see Inter also struggling against, you know, another mid to low table team, even, you know, in the great Super League debacle when, you know, the game immediately afterwards, like there was a moment where Juve was losing to Parma and Inter was losing as well. I think it was Betis, if I remember correctly. And they were in that position so many times this season that I really thought, like, this is going, at some point they're going to start dropping points. Like, it is going to happen. And it never did. I mean, credit to them, it never, ever did. They just, they're a tough team. They really, really are. They're like a gritty, tough team. Did it help that they got, you know, dumped in the group stage in the Champions League? It didn't even go to Europa League. Of course it did. But was that embarrassing for them? Of course it is, because it's an Antonio Conte team, and that's their trademark to, you know, crash and burn in Europe. But, you know, outside of that, they were really good in the league. It's a deserved result. My heartfelt congratulations to Inter, their fans. You won one trophy in 10 years. So that's dope. I can't wait for 2030.
There's the backhanded compliment.
I can't wait for like 2031 or something like that when you guys get something again. So enjoy it. I will say, though, their celebratory hashtag was like, I'm Scudetto or something like that, because it's like, I am, get it, Inter Milan and Scudetto. Like, it's terrible. It's awful. It's really, really bad. I don't know.
Also,
what
they have to they had to reintroduce what the Scudetto was to their fans. Like, it's,
yeah,
like, just
like,
this is Scudetto.
Know.
We
it's
haven't seen him in a
while. What is this word? I don't know what you're trying to say to me.
He looks a little bit like Badgie from Star Trek Lower Decks. Like, you know, this is how he's like.
They just wondered all the time, like, why does Juve always have like a little stamp on their kid? Like, what's up with that? And now they get to have it. That's really, in a way, that's heartwarming as well. So I kudos to them, especially kudos for, you know, continuing the tradition of just horrible social media hashtag for the championship celebrations. That's another thing they copied from you then, you know.
I really do, I want somebody to leak what the 10th would have been.
I was going to ask Sergio, what would his 10th straight Scudetto hashtag have been?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, because they've gone through so many awkward ham-fisted things that it's tough. It's tough. I mean, I you know, the mind wonders. I will work on one, and, you know, I'll have it ready for next pot or next piece, whatever happens first. But the mind wonders. It was going to be bad, I guarantee you. Like, it was going to make very little sense.
You have to decide if it's an IO or an LO. You know, you have to really figure out where the 10 is going to go in, if there's going to be an L over here and an O over here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a lot going on there.
The key rule is that it doesn't make sense until you read it like 5 times and it's like, oh, I get it. Like, yeah, they get that thing. Okay.
Anything's better than high five Tori. Which, you know,
yeah,
I guess 4 or 5 years ago now. So whatever, let's just get up past that. Congratulations, Tanner, whatever.
That question, by the way, I forgot to mention it beforehand, was from at Andy T 4579. So next up for San Lopresti, this is right down Broadway for you here, buddy, from at Coligno. If we get only one midfielder this mercado, should it be Manuel Locatelli or the aforementioned Rodrigo De Paul? And for Coligno personally, he would like to know, why should it be Rodrigo De Paul? For Sam Lopresti, why should it be Manuel Locatelli?
I don't know if it should be Rodrigo De Paul, but I mean, I know, obviously, I've had my heart set on Locatelli for a long time. That's not a secret on this blog. Part of that also comes from I've been referencing this part of my writing career a lot lately, but when I was at Bleacher Report years ago, I covered AC Milan during the year that Manuel Locatelli was first promoted to the first team. So I've been watching him and tracking him for a long time, because a lot of my Bleacher Report articles did say something along the lines of, why is this kid not playing and Michael Essien is. I think that it is a major, the major thing why I like Locatelli a little bit more than I like DePaul is that he's more of a regista. He's more of that kind of the deep lying guy that can create a move from the midfield and break a defense down from that spot, the way that Andrea Pirlo used to, the way that Claudio Marchisio, in a slightly different way than Pirlo, but before he got hurt, was doing out of that spot, the way Miralem Pjanic, when he was in form, could do at that spot. I think of DePaul as a little bit more of a box-to-box guy, a little bit more of what we kind of all thought Rodrigo Bentancur would turn into. Or to use another potential Juve transfer target, more along the lines of Hussein Aouar. My main reason I like Locatelli more as a transfer target is that he has a skill set that the team needs more than DePaul's skill set is. Because depending on who you keep in the lineup, Rabiot, McKennie, Bentancur, those guys can provide similar things to DePaul. DePaul's a little bit more creative, but they are those box-to-box type guys. Locatelli very much more has the skill set of that true regista that Juventus has really, really needed these last couple of years. And that's why I think that's why I would lean a little bit more towards Locatelli than I would towards DePaul.
I think might be getting too far ahead trying to talk about which midfielder we want, because I'm sitting over here looking at our midfield options and seeing how they play together and being like, we got to figure out what we want to see from our midfield before we can add anyone to it. I don't even know what this midfield's supposed to look like. You see everyone basically on free roam positioning, and you know, that doesn't really work when they're all of a sudden all in the exact same spot and no one's behind them when they give away the ball. That's why I'd really like to see an actual holding midfielder, which neither of those two guys really fit that mark, because I don't think that the best midfielders that Juventus currently have, I don't want to see Weston McKennie play a holding midfielder. His energy is way too high. He's going to be a box-to-box guy. You don't put Rodrigo there. I mean, that's why I don't just want to bring in another guy who fits the same thing that a bunch of our midfielders already have, especially when we're throwing them all out there together and it's clearly not working. So I'd like to see if Pirlo is still going to be the coach, I'd like to see what his midfield looks like before deciding who I want to bring into that midfield.
And that's a perfect transition into the next one for Caleb from at Buffonismo 2001. What do you think is the best way to get the most out of the current midfield, if there is one?
Wow. Okay. So yeah, that was a good transition. Let's just keep on rolling. I think that adding a good, consistent holding midfielder is the best way to get the most out of the two front right there. Especially, I don't think a 4-4-2 is the best way to get something out of this midfield for starters. I think a 4-3-3 would probably be a lot better. You know, 4-2-3-1 maybe, because then you can actually have a little bit more freedom in your positioning for central midfielders. I'd like to see, you know, Weston McKennie be able to push up. I'd like to see Artur actually be able to be on the ball and move around, him be that guy that can free roam a little bit. Do I have a perfect solution to that holding midfielder? No. I mean, it's not like you can just go out and find an N'Golo Kante, you know, just anywhere. I don't even know if I've seen them be a target anywhere. You know, sure, go pay Milan $3 billion for Kessier. I'd love to see his physical presence be on defense behind everyone who's pushing forward. That'd be fun. But that's not going to happen. So I can't just say Kessier, because that's not someone who's a real target. So I don't have a player solution, but that would be my solution to get the most out of the current midfield players is finding a holding midfielder. Could even be from the academy. Bring somebody up. I don't care. Just give me a good holding midfielder.
Yeah, I actually agree a lot with Caleb because I've staked my claim in the, you know, Rodrigo Bentancur and Adrien Rabiot are not bad take. Like, they're not bad players. They just don't work in that holding midfielder position. They just don't work together in the way that they're currently playing. They just don't work. But they're really, really good. Like, and it's showing at flashes. It just, you just see it here and there with Bentancur just like making a perfect run and a perfect slide to get the ball back and do all of that. That's what he's good at. You get Adrien Rabiot, you know, kind of like dribbling one guy and then just running up front and trying to make something happen in a counterattack. That's what they're really good at. And, you know, I really don't think that, I know that, you know, currently the, you know, the team as a whole, but especially the midfield is in complete shambles, but I just don't really think that they are that far away. And the best, you know, exhibit A for me is those, you know, the halcyon days of early January when Arthur finally seemed like he was, you know, getting it together and he was finally playing well. And, you know, and Juve looked a lot better. It was only for like 4 or 5 games. So it was, you know, false hope we got there. But for those 4 or 5 games, the team looked significantly better because they had a guy that could actually play that holding midfielder and just let the other dudes do what they do best. And I think if you get, once you get that guy, I think a lot of things just kind of figure themselves out. I don't think you're that far away in regards to midfield. I don't think you need to, you know, just blow it up and sell everyone. I think you really are just a couple good, you know, deep playing midfielders, and you're not that far away from really unleashing what you already have and putting them in the best position to succeed.
You know, we've said this line on the pod before. The midfield has a lot of talented guys that don't go together. They're all the same player. They don't complement each other's skills. Once you actually mesh that into a team, you know, mesh that into a unit that can actually support each other and play, then you've got a much better midfield and a much better team and a team that can actually create.
Yeah, I think bringing up Vintinger and Rabiot and talking about how good players actually are, we think about how excited we got about Rodrigo when we first saw him and how good we thought he was going to be. He had a holding midfielder. I mean, he had Max Allegri, but he had a holding midfielder in Vezina Matuidi behind him. Even Sami Khedira can do the job behind these guys right now. I mean, maybe not anymore. But the point is that those...
Sami wouldn't be upright, so that's the...
Well, you know, maybe 4 years ago, Sami could play in this midfield. He'd be a good fit for it. 5 years ago, Sami.
All right, Sergio, back to you. Could it be Paulo Dybala's season next season if Pirlo gets sacked and Allegri returns?
I wish. I mean, I hope so. I mean, that'd be fun. The thing with Paulo Dybala is that he, you know, this whole narrative about, you know, him being a tough player to fit in is just not true. He's a second striker. He's always been a second striker. Like, that's where he's played his best. That's where you can get the most out of him. He's the second striker that plays very well with a, you know, like a straight number nine, with a pure number nine, and Alvaro Morata, a Mario Mandzukic type of dude. That's just who he is. And he's really, really good at that. And I just see this team, and that very much includes Paulo Dybala, that very much includes the entire midfield. And I see a team that is just a few tweaks, a few players here and there, a few moves here and there, and it's not a bad team. And that very much includes Paulo Dybala, because if you play him, I think that if, you know, right now, obviously, we've seen very little of both Morata and Dybala healthy and fit. I actually don't think that's happened all season long. But I think if you just run with those guys, that's going to lead you to pretty good results, because we've seen what they can do together. And it's been pretty damn good. Dybala has had his best season just playing as that second striker type of guy. And it wouldn't, you know, obviously right now we're in, you know, full on Twitter transfer rumors, you know, wild speculation. Andrea Pirlo is for sure getting fired if he loses his next match, but then he wins and he's definitely staying, and just all that sort of, you know, complete bull that makes no sense. But, you know, we've been seeing this. If Max Allegri comes back, he's going to bring in, like, he's going to, they're going to let Ronaldo go, and he's going to bring in, like, Moise Keane and something like that. Like, that would be to, and build around Dybala, which, sure, let's hope so. But I think that would actually be the best way to get the best out of him. Just put him on with a true number nine, a true striker, and just let him loose, and he will get results, because we've seen him get results playing in that position before. It's not rocket science. That's the thing. And the problem is that when you have a dude like Cristiano Ronaldo, he is just by virtue of who he is, it's going to change that, and it's going to make a lot of other dudes seem like they are difficult to play with him, which it is, but it's not because they are necessarily the ones that are difficult to play with. It's because Cristiano Ronaldo is the guy who's, you know, pretty difficult to play with. He's a guy that demands a lot of the ball, but he's not an out and out nine. He scores a lot, but he doesn't really do the hold up job that you need from a number nine. He kind of initiates attacks from the left wing. Like, he is kind of like a weird player to fit your team around it. Have teams that have done so been very successful in the past? Absolutely. But, you know, he's just kind of like that weird player to fit things around. And I think if next year they do let Ronaldo go, you know, there would be worse scenarios than to see a team build around Dybala and, say, Chiesa, for example. I think that would be a really good team, a really fun team. And I hope that happens, despite having no actual evidence it will. But I would hope, I would like that to be the case.
Listen, if Juventus gets rid of Ronaldo and gives me a Dybala, Moise Keane front line, I'm going to forgive the Super League. I'll forgive everything. I'll buy all the jerseys. I'll buy season tickets. I can't even go to games. Like, I'm all in if you give me that.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why, like, that Twitter thing that I saw, it was, like, specifically designed to get, like, Juve fans that, like, really liked the team, like, 5 years ago or 4 years ago. Like, it was specifically designed to get everyone, like, yes, let's do that. Like, that's why I don't believe it's true, because it's too much. Like, someone's been reading the comment section, and they were trying to engineer a rumor that would just, you know, make people like Caleb and me get excited. But I just don't think that will happen. I hope that'd be super cool to see happen, but I just don't think it will.
Good job talking through me hitting over my mic, by the way, Sergio.
Pro's pro. You know what they say.
All right, Sam, over to you. From friend of the blog and loyal blog reader at Handy Vandy, Champions League or Super League, which league will Juventus be in next fall? And as a follow-up, because Handy Vandy is the king of the two-part question, will the wings of Fedi propel Juventus to European glory like they are destined to do?
Well, maybe one of the wings will. I don't know about the other one anymore.
One of them will.
if we do end up with European glory in the near future, Federico Chiesa is going to have a lot to do with it. Berna, I'm not so certain. As for the first question, ever since the collapse of the Super League, we've been talking more about the top four and, you know, getting back into the Champions League. The fact of the matter is, it's still an unresolved question at this point as to whether or not we'd be playing in either.
You need a third option there for sure.
Yeah, there is the third option of the Super League is dead and Alexander Seferin out of spite bans Juve from European competition for a year or two, which, given the and this is another reason, you know, piggybacking off of what I said last week and what I hope will be in print soon, another reason why I don't necessarily think that Andrea Agnelli is a viable president for Juventus going forward. Because, you know, if Agnelli is the guy that has to deal with UEFA after this whole debacle, is anybody going to want to talk to him? I don't think so. So, I mean, barring any bans, it's going to be the Champions League, because the Super League, you know, if you want to, you know, try and do the Super League next year, sure, you can just play a bunch of games between Juve and Barcelona and Real Madrid. And isn't AC Milan still in there right now officially, I think? But yeah, sure, play a little four-team league for, like, the off to the side for the entire year and hope that a bunch of people subscribe to DAZN to get it. But if that's even still a thing, which probably it isn't. But yeah, it's it'll be the Champions League, barring any funky UEFA punishments. I'm sure that there will be some sort of punishment levied at the club. It's likely to be in the form of a fine rather than a ban, I think, unless there is so much animosity from Seferin to Juventus and Agnelli specifically that he just goes for broke against Juventus. That would end up getting appealed out the wazoo to the Court of Arbitration for Sport and all that stuff. But yeah, the answer is Champions League if we're going to be playing in Europe or Europa League, depending. But yeah, if Juventus finish top four, Champions League. Yeah, that's the answer.
Well, how far does that bitterness extend? So where the whole decision is going to be made on if Juventus makes Champions League, they're banned. But if they make Europa League, make them play in that.
Europa League, baby.
Oh, yes.
He's back.
We were waiting for that. Good. It's back. The chaos is back. Yeah. The familiar chaos, not the Tito chaos.
It's ready to be defeated by Clint Dempsey again.
It's going to be so much more fun to watch them play in the Europa League. So much more fun. Like, they're going to play in, like, the round of 32 against some weird Belgian team, and they're barely going to make it through. It's just going to be fun. I want it to be fun. I want it to have a chance to win something. Because next year they ain't winning the Champions League, but they might win the Europa League, and that would be fun. Seeing them lift trophies, it's fun. Even if it's a glorified second-tier European competition, it's fun. Still, I would enjoy it.
That's why Sergio's going to be all in on the Coppa Italia in a couple of weeks. You heard it here first.
Of course. I've already forgotten about Serie A. Like, I don't care. It's all about Coppa Italia, baby.
We're Super Coppa champions, Danny.
That's right. And Sergio's Twitter
name. We already have a joke. We don't need it anymore.
Sergio's People Twitter forget. Name will not let you forget it.
People forget we actually are the Super Coppa champion.
Yeah. Next up here from another friend of the blog, from at Arthur Schmidt IV. If Pirlo were to be removed as manager, can you see a scenario where he becomes the under 23 coach like he was supposed to be originally?
I would like to see it. I would love to see him be able to actually move into being a coach, actually get a little bit more experience under his belt. But you don't see that happen. You just don't see someone being rushed into a job and then them just backtracking and being okay with it. And I mean, maybe if anyone, Pirlo seems like the kind of guy who might not take things personally and just be fine staying with the, you know, the club that he has done so much for and being the U23 coach. But I don't see that happening basically across the board with anybody. So I'll say no. It wouldn't shock me if he stayed, but I would bet no, that doesn't happen.
Depends a lot on who's in charge of Juventus after May as well. That's the other thing.
Yeah, if it's a cleaning house kind of thing, it doesn't matter if he wants the U23 job or not. They're going to force him out. Good question. I should mention that since we didn't expound on it as much. Still a solid question. We appreciate it.
Since we've already talked a little bit of the midfield, we will throw one more to Sergio before we get everybody to chip in on the final one. From at Nikhil Servage 2, what's the best midfield we can realistically have next season?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, you know, just like we were mentioning before, right? Like, you get, you know, it seems like the Manuel Locatelli thing, it's probably happening at this point. You know, it's been reported widely. It's known that, you know, the team likes him as a player, and he just fits to a T what they need right now. So realistically speaking, I think a Locatelli flanked by, you know, Bentancur and, say, McKinney, because it seems like Adrian Rabiot is being sacrificed in the capital gains altar. But, you know, I think that would be realistic. I think that's not, you know, a super expensive proposition. I think, you know, it would work. Because, like I've said, I'm still high on Rodrigo Bentancur. I still think that when deployed correctly, he can be an asset. And McKinney, we've seen that he can be an asset. You know, he's obviously, his form has taken a turn for the worse lately. But, you know, that injury is that, you know, what all you want to, you know, chalk up to all the bunch of stuff that he's been involved in lately. But, you know, I still think he can be a really, really good box-to-box midfielder. And I would say that, you know, Bentancur, McKinney, Locatelli type of mid, I think that's realistic. I think that would actually be really good. I think it would solve a lot of the issues that the team currently has. And I wouldn't mind it seeing, you know, not one bit, I wouldn't mind seeing that. Assuming, of course, that anybody gives Juventus just anything for Aaron Ramsey at this point. Like, I'm talking a couple sack of balls and, you know, they'll chip in for the, you know, J Stadium, like, you know, vendors or something. Whatever it is, just get Aaron Ramsey out of here. But as long as they do that, I think they're going to be fine. And I think they're going to have a solid midfield. Will that be enough to, you know, challenge for the Champions League? Probably not. But I think it's a lot better than what they currently have. And I don't think it's a super unreasonable, you know, expectation or a super unreasonable scenario to see.
I think it also depends a lot on what moves happen around it. I think if you're looking at a summer where Ronaldo leaves the club, at that point you're getting 29, 30 million as a transfer fee. You're wiping out almost 60 million euros of his wages off the books gross. That's a point where you might be able to leverage enough money to pick up Locatelli and either a Depaul or an Aouar or something like that, especially, you know, if Lyon end up wanting Mattia De Ciglio for the future, using that as a potential make weight for Aouar it could be in play as well. A midfield of Locatelli, Aouar / Depaul and Bentancur / McKennie. That I don't think it's probable, but I do think it could be realistic if everything were to go a certain way. But I do think that given the fact that Juventus does have to spread whatever money they do end up with around, because there are far more holes to fill than just the midfield on this team, I agree with Sergio that the most realistic look is Locatelli flanked by some of the guys that are already on the roster.
If we're making wish lists for having that much money, bring me Camavinga or Gravenberch, or go out somewhere where we haven't talked about yet and go get me one of those young guys. I'll pay all the money for them.
Or just give Nicolo Fagioli a run. Like, let's see what the kid has. Screw it.
Yeah, it's so weird because you sometimes get like internet brain, and like it's the same thing with like Luca Pellegrini, who's still on loan somewhere, Cagliari, I think, and everyone's like super high on him. Genoa, thank you. And like everyone was super high on him. We all really wanted him to be on the team and to play, and they just loan him out. And now with Nicolo Fagioli, everyone's like, yeah, he looks good. Let's give him a shot. And they give him no shot whatsoever. And it really makes you wonder, like, do we really not know anything? Or does he look really bad on training? Like, at this point, I really don't understand why not give him a shot. Like, there's like...
He just had a fantastic game for the under-23 team.
Yeah.
Scored a penalty, had a couple of really great passes. I think he had an assist or two.
Yeah, I mean,
like he just had a fantastic game and said it for the under-23s this past weekend.
I understand not wanting him to, you know, throw him to the Wolves in the Coppa Italia final or against Inter or whatever, but you were facing Udinese. Like, that's a pretty, you know, game where you could afford to just see what happened, just kind of like see something. I guess they kind of did that with Felix Correa, who had his Serie A debut, but I mean, I think that was nice, but he played like 10 minutes. I don't know how much you can make of it. But yeah, I would definitely like to see more of those dudes being given a shot, especially with the season winding down. They're not in danger of losing their under-23 eligibility. So at this point, give them a go, right? But I mean, who knows? We're not there in training every day. Maybe they're just, you know, not ready. Maybe they just don't like what they see. Who knows? But it really is baffling to me that they just don't, you know, give him a shot at this point.
Or Dragusin in there, that holding midfielder, see what chaos. I mean, he'll get a yellow card in like 5 minutes, but it'll be fun. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see that.
All righty. Final question here from at Andar Sofian. What is your best moment of the season so far? And this is for everybody.
The start, I guess. The first game against Sampdoria, where we all were hopeful and enjoying things.
That might also be Aaron Ramsey's best moment of the season.
Aaron Ramsey,
yeah, certainly Ramsey's.
I think I named him my MVP of that game because he was legitimately good. Like, he was really, really good. I mean, by far the best game he had for Juve. Insane. We already thought he was going to be the key, and look at that. But, you know, being serious, I think that Milan game, that you know, when the title race was still on, when Milan was leading, you know, that it was Federico Chiesa's coming out party. He had that, you know, beautiful go-ahead goal with Dybala linking with him and that backheel pass. Massive win. You know, we all really thought, here we go. This is Juve. We're making a run for the title. And then injuries, bad luck, COVID, you know, everything happened. And everything went away. It's just, yeah, it's a shame. But I think that was the high point of the season. And, you know, quickly, you know, harping back on what a previous question was about whether Pirlo would take a under 23 place. That's the type of games that I'm thinking. I think he can, he does have the skills to be a good manager. I think with time, he could become a very, very good coach because he won those type of games. You know, the Coppa Italia semifinal against Inter, you know, he really managed the hell out of that, those both legs. So he definitely has talent. This was maybe too much, too fast for him, but that's what I would love to see him get another shot, because there were a lot of flashes this season like that definitely, you know, showed that he has the capability. So, but yeah, the highlight of the season for me, that Milan game for sure.
I'm in total agreement. And just the, not only, I mean, the circumstances of that game where, you know, Juve were missing a bunch of guys from COVID at the time. I think there were four guys, I think. And it was De Ligt was out, Cuadrado was out. And it was also, like you said, Sergio, the coming out party for Federico Chiesa. And I think the true stamp of, because, you know, Chuck said this last week or a week or 2 weeks ago, you know, there were a lot of people, Chuck's included, that were not convinced by Chiesa's signing. That were sensing, you know, that who thought that it would be more along the lines of a second Bernardeschi signing than what it has turned out to be so far. And that was full on confirmation that you had a real gem in Chiesa and that you have this, regardless of what happens with Ronaldo in the future, regardless really of what happens with Dybala in the future, Federico Chiesa is the potential centerpiece to this team for a really, really long time. And that was the game that really announced that to the world. And we'll see how, you know, we'll see how the future goes. But yeah, and you know, at that time, and especially given the situation at the time, Milan was the hottest team in the league. They hadn't lost a game in months at that point. I think they were still unbeaten in the league at that point. And you know, to go into the San Siro, obviously an empty San Siro, but still the San Siro, and win that game and play really one of their best games of the season, badly shorthanded. Best moment of the year by far. Honorable mention to the Camp Nou game as well. That's
where I was going. McKinney's scissor kick goal is absolutely, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's still like a background on like three of my different social media profiles. It's on my phone. It's whatever. It was an incredible feeling. I mean, that's obviously, we had saw how well McKinney had been playing leading up to that point. But there was just something in that moment that made it click, like, man, this guy is actually that good. He's not just going to be a staple in the U.S. men's national team for years to come. He could legitimately be a staple in a Juventus midfield over the next 5 years. I mean, and that's just really, really exciting to watch. I do think if I go back to a league game, go way, way back, we talked about the beginning when things were going well, especially for this guy, but the Kulusevski's debut goal was just so beautiful. I mean, the way that's exactly what we knew he was capable of. You always, you know, he was going to be that guy who was always cutting in on his left foot, and he just passed that ball into the corner of the net, and we're like, oh, this guy is exactly who we thought he was going to be, and he's going to be incredible, and I still have faith in him. Sorry, you know, for anyone who doesn't, but I'd love to see him in the Chiesa on opposite flanks for a while. That'd be a lot of fun. So big goals by first-year players were among my favorite moments for this year.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, we'll wrap things up there. Thank you, everybody, for your Twitter questions. This was obviously one of the biggest responses we've ever gotten, and that's why we decided to spend a whole lot of time on this episode answering them. So, as always, you can send in your Twitter questions to @JuventusNation on Twitter. You can also follow us on Facebook @BlackAndWhiteAndRed all over. Same search phrase if you want to listen to us on Apple Podcasts and on iTunes. Can search Black and White and Rattle over there. Same goes for Spotify and Google Podcasts. I want to thank Caleb, the newbie of the group, for jumping on with us in place of our resident Dutchman Chucks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming by. So for Caleb, for the aforementioned Chucks, who's out doing some good community work, for Sam Lopresti and Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week, which, by the way, Sam's been asking the last few weeks. It'll be our 1 year anniversary show. You know, maybe we'll have Chucks lead the party since he's obviously the rowdiest one of the group. So for everybody, this is Danny once again saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.